Center. You know who that is. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Purple Haze.
I didn't know who it was.
Oh, my goodness. That's tragic, Sandy.
What? What? Who is? Is it Led Zeppelin?
It's Jimi Hendrix.
Jimi Hendrix. Oh,
yeah.
That's right, Mr. Upside Down.
Weren't you alive when he was alive?
I was absolutely alive. I just was never into knowing the names of the music I liked. Right.
Just that guitar and that opening is legendary.
No, I remember when he played the Star Spangled Banner with his guitar.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. I want to go back quickly about this discussion. And if you haven't paid any attention to it, I think you should. I think everybody should, because what's at stake here is really a game changer. And the fact that it's on the table and being discussed is what I think, as an American who believes in the Constitution, believes in voting and all those things, understand that the fact that, you know, Republicans were able to pull these things off while things have been gerrymandered. And really, you gotta understand that if you put all the pieces together, Sandy, with what the Republicans have done over the last 10 to 15 years, somebody has orchestrated this movement. If you still look at it, Republicans haven't really won a real race nationally, as far as the presidency is concerned, with sheer numbers of votes. They've been losing constantly. And they're not foolish. They know that the majority of the American people aren't going to be voting. They're not going to win races outright. They've seen that historically. And now this is a way that they can maintain, you know, what it is they want.
Well, here's the deal. When you play canasta, you play by the rules. And I think the Republicans have looked at the rules far more carefully than the Democrats have, and they formulated a strategy that took the rules and played them to the maximum advantage, okay? And that's most people call that shrewd, and they applaud the winner. And so I do blame the Democratic Party and their approach to politics and their basic the way they have given up the rural vote and given it to the Republicans. Because when you get down to it, and I think historians will agree with this in the long run, it was yielding the rural vote which has caused the Republican strategy to be able to be implemented. And it was the Republicans, I think, who realized and took advantage of their capacity to seize the rural vote in the face of the strategies being used by the Democrats that have allowed this. But yes, this case, this decision that's pending, it kept me up last night, because when I read about it, I realized, you know, it's unbelievable. This would dwarf in its impact on our political structure. This would dwarf Citizens United, because it would allow all these things that we've looked at that Trump did after the 2020 election, calling the Secretary of State in Georgia, calling the Secretary of State and the governor of Arizona, and saying, look, you guys can send electors to the Electoral College that don't reflect the headcount vote in your state. You have the power to do it. Go ahead and do it. And they said, no, we've got to follow the state constitution. We're not going to do that, okay? This decision would have empowered them to do exactly what Trump was asking them to do. Nothing they would have done if this case goes the wrong way would have violated the law, the federal law, and they could have gone ahead and implemented an electoral college vote that was totally not reflective of their own state's vote, and we would have ended up with a U.S. president that was, you know, a U.S. president who lost the headcount vote by over 10 million votes, and who had used the system. He played canasta to the point of You know, they've won the they win the game, and I think what would happen is we'd all want to stop playing canasta.
Well, they don't win the game; the American people lose.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The game would no longer be a tolerable game to be in, right? You'd leave the table and say, "I'm not going to play this game." And what does that mean from a social democratic standpoint? That means essentially uprising. That means terrible social turmoil. That means a process that is very difficult to solve through elections.
So here's what I don't understand, Sandy, going back to the rural part of this, who say, well, the Democrats have left us, so we'll turn this over to people whose plans are going to damage them as well as Democrats. And then it's at a time when our country is pointing its finger at China. And what's going on there with the COVID situation. It's pointing its finger at Iran, and we're talking about what's happening, taking the freedoms away from the people in Iran. What is this?
All right, well, absolutely.
I mean, Sandy, come on.
I know, but you know, this is the manifestation of what Tom was referring to that I keep coming back to, which is the parties are so afraid that the other side, when they get control, and I think the Republicans have persuaded their constituency, which is and the constituency that has allowed them to take the state houses, that Democrats and liberals are essentially Marxists, and Marxist is an unknown principle that is just anathema to. And scary, right? It's a scary principle that if these people take control, they're going to what? They're going to implement what? But they don't say what it is, other than the fact that they're Marxists, socialists.
But see what they're doing.
Yes,
right. But you can't point to anything that comes anywhere near. Even if you say they abandon the rural Democrats. None of that even compares to the depth of this.
Well, I'm just saying that their ability to grab the rural vote and to through that process grab the state houses is what makes this case so frightening. Because if the state houses were all kind of purple, right? If much more of the country was purple geographically than is currently the case, this decision would be troublesome, but it wouldn't have the obvious dangers that it has in today's world.
You know, I'm going to reluctantly move away from this because, you know, I just think people need to really feel what this is, right? I mean, this should be on every television channel.
Well, I think the people who are conservative ought to turn this on its head and say, what would we feel like 25 years from now if the Democrats adopt a strategy that is as successful as the Republican strategy has been for the last 25 years? And if 25 years from now, all the state houses in the country seem to be dominated by Democrats, how will this look then?
So let's look at that part of it. So Republicans control 30 or more state houses, and they've been as high as 33 in the last couple presidencies. They have control over these. What's improved for the Republican, the people who call themselves Republicans? The rank-and-file Republicans with Republicans in control of the state houses. What's really improved for them?
Well, I don't know. That's why I come back to the median family in the country, and that median family, the two breadwinners who earn $75,000 together, and lots of the median families and the people who surround the median in terms of income levels are Republicans, are conservatives, and those people ought to be looking at their situation and realizing that the platform, certainly the platform of the Republican Party, offers them nothing.
Let's just take Wisconsin. Let's take Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
What has improved with the legislature being totally controlled, even when Governor Walker was governor and a Republican governor, Republican legislature, what really improved? For Republicans, everyday rank-and-file Republicans, our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. You can't point to anything. It was under their leadership that the farms and the dairy farms kind of took the kind of licking that they took. Right.
Right. Well, and Wisconsin's jab situation, you know, the Walker administration had to cut the Foxconn deal to try and promise the kind of job improvement that they promised at the time of the initial election of Walker. And, of course, that didn't work out.
Right.
And the tax cuts that were enacted weren't beneficial, particularly to the median families. We didn't get child daycare. The medical care problems in Wisconsin weren't improved when Walker decided to turn down the Medicaid expansion in Wisconsin. There's been little, none really, in the way of middle class activity in the state of Wisconsin under Republican leadership that has improved the plight of middle class and lower middle class Wisconsinites.
So, you know, I mean, you know, I really do hope that people take a look at this. You know, whatever it is you're reading, you know, even if it's your local paper, whatever it is, you need to take a look at this case that is going to be brought up. Because I think even though you got all that conversation about Roe versus Wade, this thing here.
Yeah. We have this caller, CJ, who calls in all the time. It'd be very interesting to find out whether someone like CJ thinks that it would be a good idea for the headcount in Wisconsin to be ignored in the determination of the Electoral College votes.
Yeah, well, you know... He's going to be like many of the others.
Well, I don't want to predict what he's going to say. I just think that it would be interesting to me whether this case reflects the views of conservatives.
Sandy, if the shoe was on the other foot, Rome would be burning. If it was Democrats
absolutely.
Trying to do this, you couldn't get a word in edgewise. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. You know, Sandy, it's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. Sandy, there's so much that we as the American people don't know that goes into running a government and all these different entities that exist that impact and affect our lives. We don't know all the rules and all the bylaws and all those things that are at the root of them. All we know is, hey, I need a loan. I'm going to go to my local institution, and they offer loans. And so my credit is good enough. I want to get the loan. But we don't know the regulations and all the other things that go into that. All we know is at the end they say, yay, you can have it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get excited. But we don't know, on average, how any of these things work. So they're entities called watchdog
agencies. It has to do with two things. People don't know. And secondly, they don't have any leverage. When you need money, you need money. You know, there used to be you'd go to some guy, some Italian guy. I'm not kidding.
Guido.
Yeah, Guido. And, you know, you could borrow, pardon me, Italians.
Some of us.
Yeah.
Could go.
You know, but that was the story, at least.
Right.
And you'd go to the illegal lender who would kneecap you if you didn't pay him back. And you understood that, but you needed the money desperately. Now we've got payday lenders and people like that. And the people desperately need loans. They understand that if they go to the payday lender and don't pay them back, it's going to cost them an arm and a leg to pay it back. But they need the money so badly, and they don't have any leverage. And so, you know, what the federal government is out there to do is to sort of create better leverage. If you're going to lend money to poor people, you can't put them in the poorhouse like essentially payday lenders do. If you don't pay a payday lender back on time, you can owe twice and three times the loan amount.
Sandy, you said you can't put them in the poorhouse, but yeah, you can. Legal to do it.
Well, I'm saying
to the poor.
Right. So that's what this Consumer Finance Protection Agency is about, is to try and set up rules and regulations that would try to levelize the marketplace a bit, so that the people without leverage who need money aren't going to be on their knees and essentially whipped to death by their lenders because of their lack of leverage. The government's going to stand in their place and create rules and regulations to levelize the marketplace. And what's happened now is that the conservatives, probably armed with both money and arguments from those lenders, are coming forward and saying, wait a minute, you're shutting down access by the poor to borrowing. And they'll go out to the constituents and say, look, we're trying to protect your ability to borrow money. And here the federal government is going to try and constrain that. And money's going to be less available to you if these federal rules come into place. And furthermore, the conservatives are using these arguments that they've already used against the EPA. They're saying, look, an agency can't implement rules that aren't specifically supported by the specific language of the legislation. Well, just think what the language of legislation would have to be to deal with all of the various kinds of lending arrangements that exist in the marketplace. And as soon as a law was implemented that had all the rules for the existing tools,
they come up with new ones.
They come up with new ones. So you need to have an agency that has flexibility to deal with objectives rather than with pure language specificity. And that's one of the contests of the administrative power of government. It was one of the contests at the time of the New Deal. Do the agencies have broad authority to implement objectives, or do the objectives have to be specifically spelled out? And the Felix Frankfurter, Earl Warren liberal court said, no, you've got it. You've got the ability the agencies can implement objectives. This new conservative court is saying, no, you got to find the actual words in the legislation. And that's a huge difference.
Which they can't find because they don't exist.
Well, they don't exist because you couldn't enact legislation that is that specific and that would deal with all the specificities that the marketplace will come up with.
So in the meantime, the people who can least afford it are prey.
Yeah.
To these institutions.
And you know, and I would say that leverage is a bigger problem than knowledge. Knowledge is a problem. People who are desperate don't even look at the fine print because all they know is they need the money. They could read the fine print. They could understand it. They have a vague understanding of how expensive it might be. Look, lots of Americans will borrow money through their credit cards even though they know that the credit card interest rate is going to be 18%. And for many credit cards, it's 18%. You're
right.
Late on a month, 18%. 18% is astronomical.
So what is usury? So if myself as, and you, Sandy, as you know, just citizens, what is usury? 33%?
Well, usury, actually, interestingly, if you get in the history of it, was actually kind of, you have Sharia law that doesn't allow the, no. Sharia law doesn't allow the use of interest at all.
Okay.
Usury was a Christian principle that basically said you can't, and it was kind of had to do with the notion that
it still exists though, right? There's
lenders,
still usury.
That lenders weren't Christian. Mostly they were Jewish, quite frankly, in the Middle Ages, because the Christian law was like Sharia law and didn't allow the use of interest, usury. So it was different methods were employed. usury is an old principle, and it's sort of a, like, is there a moral limit on how much interest should be paid? And so usury has disappeared as a concept, pretty much.
But is there still a usury law on the books that one citizen to another citizen can only charge a certain amount of interest? Is that still on the books?
It would depend state to state, but right. I would say in large part, no.
All right, got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We're going to come back to this on the other side. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. You can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Let me go here, Sandy, because, you know, these first couple subjects, really, there's so much to them. I'm going to move on hesitantly. Fearing scandal. Air Force blocked general's foreign consulting deals. So help me understand how somebody who's been a general for the United States Army should be able to, they oversaw U.S. supply routes through corruption-plagued Azerbaijan, sought to profit from their connections once they retired. An Air Force lawyer objected. The Post sued to make the case public. So what they're saying is you're once, you used to be a United States, general. And so you have connections globally. You've been able to do a lot of different things. Now you become a consultant. There's opportunities for you now to make a killing financially.
Right.
Do you think that's an okay deal?
No, but I think the problem is that Washington has gotten so jaundiced about this, so jaded, that, for instance, every U.S. senator, when they stop being U.S. senator, goes off and gets on the board of directors of five companies and sells influence. And it's what they expect. It's sort of like, okay, you know, I put in my time in Washington. Now I'm going to go out and make my money because I'm going to peddle my influence. And that's what people in the Defense Department do. That's what people in the Securities and Exchange Commission do. And there ought to be broadly based conflict of interest requirements. You can come to the U.S. government and work for the U.S. government, but what you can't do when you leave is to peddle influence. You know, if you're an accountant in the U.S. government, you can go out and be an accountant in private industry, but you can't go out and somehow sell the capacity to people to influence what it is that the regulatory authority is doing that you are sitting in the regulatory seat of. You know, it smells, and it smells everywhere. And the problem is that Washington smells everywhere like this. If you go to K Street, the lobbyists, the people who are lobbyists, many of them were congressmen. You know, people have learned how to turn the government job into money, and we've all become inured to it. Quite frankly, the Hunter Biden thing stinks to high heaven, and I don't blame the Republicans for talking about it because
they've got their own Hunter Biden.
You know, sure they do. I mean, oh my gosh. I mean, young Jared Kushner gets $1 billion from the Saudis after being in charge of negotiations with the Saudis for the U.S. federal government. It's this all is just a horrible display of turning government into money. It's really all a part of what Tom complains about, which is that money has taken control of government, and it's taken control of the minds of the people we have who are in government, because they're constantly worrying about whether what they do in their government capacity is going to disrupt their potential to make a lot of money when they get out of government, which compromises what they do in government. Why do we think that the FAA regulators got so soft on board? I'm sure it's because many people in the FAA saw their future in as a job with someone like Boeing. So they decided to play nice.
You know, Sandy, one of the reasons why I love our show so much is because we bring this information and your in-depth understanding of all of those things. We as the American people know nothing of any of this.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we run around and we talk about our democracy. We talk about the greatness of our democracy. We don't know this. We don't, and we don't, it doesn't bother us because, you know, it's, we don't see it.
Well, we seem to be closing our eyes to so much. We close our eyes to the 800 plus billion we spend on defense that's declared to be, it's being spent to keep America safe, but the case is never made for what safety it is that America is being preserved for. You know, what is the safety mechanism that's being deployed as the result of all this money, and what are the threats? And as a result, we aren't spending money on a whole bunch of things that could be beneficial to the American people. We seem to ignore that, and we seem to ignore the extent to which all sorts of the apparatus in our government has been compromised by the extent to which these conflicts of interest exist, so that the purity of our democracy and the purity of our government, you know, it isn't subject to the same kind of money-changing hands that occurs in Ukraine and Russia and in a whole bunch of the other countries of the world. It's not that kind of corruption. It's a little more subtle, but it's very pervasive.
You know, Sandy, prior to getting an opportunity to do radio, I was one of the people who didn't pay any attention to these things, right?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't. And it's only since I've been able to be over these airwaves that I'm starting to look at these things and say, oh, whoa, wait a minute. Democrat or Republican.
Right.
This is the way these things are situated. This is the way it goes. It's the way it's always gone.
Well, and it's getting worse because, you know, the conflict of interest rules used to be stricter than they are. To the extent that there's been a trend over the years with respect to conflict of interest rules, they've gotten more lenient rather than more severe. Every once in a while, the government will talk about, oh, we're going to make some more stringent conflict of interest rules applicable to agency officials. They never talk about making them applicable to U.S. senators or congressmen.
So kickbacks, you know, even on the local levels, you know, there's an alderman. So aldermen get their salaries. But then there's some other things going on where aldermen can, if you don't watch them, if you don't know, there's some extra things that they can get that shouldn't be legal. But if you can't filter those things and follow all of those things, they're going to get a couple extra nuggets, right? Which you would say, hey, that shouldn't be right. You get a salary. That should be the end of it.
Well, there's all kinds of things. Supreme Court justices giving speeches in Hawaii. You know, I remember there was a Supreme Court justice who when he died at a hunting lodge in Texas, a very expensive private hunting lodge in Texas recently. What was he doing at an expensive private hunting lodge in Texas? Who was his host? What was the issue there? We don't seem to have the backbone to enact really stringent conflict of interest rules, and we've got people in office whose purity of heart seems to be compromised, and I suspect it's because they feel like they are beyond being compromised, and so they can accept this, they can accept that, they can play golf here, they can go to that hunting lodge there, they can go to this speech in Hawaii, they can give this speech in the Bahamas, they can go over to West Germany on this particular boondoggle. All of this has become the way of the land. Talk to a congressman. They can tell you about the various boondoggles they've been on. The things that compromise officials are getting more and more available and less scrutinized.
Well, you know, Sandy, and the reason that they're less and less scrutinized is because reporters— news reporters used to be able to dig into those kind of things. Instead, now they're digging into whether or not Ye said and what he said.
Yeah.
And that apparently makes more money. People are more interested in that foolishness.
Well, let's unbundle what's happened to the newspaper industry, because it used to be—
So before we do that, let's go to Bill from Oconomowoc. Hey, Bill, how you doing? Thank you very much for the call. How you doing? You say what?
Great conversation. You know, I really believe Sandy was alluding to it, but I'm not going to allude to it. I'm going to face it head on. Our political structure in the U.S. is such as this. We can buy a candidate and put them in office. I really was nervous when Citizens United was enacted, because I pictured the Saudis buying a political person and putting him into office. That can happen, and nobody can say it can't. When they had the IRS scandal, as they called it, what that was about was the IRS was starting to audit these people who want a tax-free status, but yet they didn't qualify for it. So they called it a scandal. There have been so many pushbacks on trying to authenticate and show accountability to our system that have been stopped because it's so all about money. Now, if I'm wrong, and we can't buy our political candidates, I'm going to hang up and hear your counterpoints. Well, thanks, and have a great day.
No, but you're not wrong. We all know you can buy them.
Well, in fact, you know, you mentioned Saudi, but one of the reasons that Ukraine got so much attention in the United States before the Ukrainian war was that Ukraine was a very corrupt place, and they understood very well how corruption could be played in politics, and they were spending lots of money on American politicians. We had the Russian-leaning Ukrainians spending lots of money. Look at Paul Manafort and how much money he obtained from the Ukraine. You know, suddenly Ukraine became a place where politicians could get very rich. Burisma spending lots of money on Hunter Biden. But that's just the tip of the iceberg. Those are a couple of the examples of what we know about. There was plenty of money flowing into the U.S. government and into officials of U.S. government from Ukraine. And Ukraine was divided between those who leaned toward Russia and the Ukrainian nationalists. And we have people in the U.S. who reflect both sides and both interests. And it's because money was spent to make sure that they were made aware of it. There were lobbyists, lobbyists who filed appropriately for their status, as well as those who didn't, like Paul Manafort. So, yes, I mean, it does represent a risk in that regard, as well as simply all kinds of private interests being reflected in the U.S. government instead of the public's interest.
Tom, quickly.
Tom. Say this. Yeah, can you hear me, Earl?
Yeah, go ahead.
The statistic out there that everyone should be aware of, the statistic out there that every election, the person that spends more money on the election wins 94% of the time. The person that spends the most money on an election gets elected 94% of the time. Buckley versus Vallejo, Citizens United, Bilotti versus First National Bank. These are the three cases that have taken government away from we the people and have put it into the hands of uber wealthy.
Tom, having said that, and you constantly repeat it, and yet I don't think it moves the American people as much as it should, because the American people really don't care about those things.
I hope that the American people.
It's almost like I believe, man, that they've just given up, that we can do anything.
I hope the American people wake up woke. That's the real definition of woke. Wake up and see what's going on. 80% of the day of the congressman's day is dialing for dollars. Look at every email you get. Look at every text you get. Begging like beggars on the street.
I got that,
for
but
money.
That's not as romantic as about Kim Kardashian and her scams, if you know what I mean.
No, I do know what you mean, but it's so disgusting. And the thing is, it's bread and circus, right? We're back to bread and circus. We're back to the zoo.
Hey, Connor, are you surprised I know about scams?
No.
No, all right.
I'm not.
Sandy, you don't know what skims are.
Skims?
Sure.
Yeah, I know what skims
are. Okay. Well, how do you and I know about skims?
Gosh, because I don't know. I've been subjected to them, I suppose.
Hey, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. You know, it's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. Listen, I know the subjects that Sandy and I are discussing on these Monday mornings and Friday mornings, there are things that maybe it didn't come to mind for many of you, but we're going to keep on talking about them because these things really do impact your life and the future of your children's lives, and the fact that many of us have lived this long in our lives and not known, you know, what's at the root of these things that happen in our government. I think it's clearly important that we understand, even though we're like reeds shaking in the wind. Most people aren't going to focus on it anyway, but it still doesn't mean that we shouldn't use this platform to reach out to people and let them know exactly what's happening in their country and what's happening to them. You know, Sandy, off the air, we start talking about the newspapers and what happened and what we used to see, right, in all these things.
We were talking about basically the corruption, the general sort of it's less corrupt than dollars being handed directly crossing palms. It's more invidious than that, but it's very pervasive, and it's also this general compromising of individuals in politics and in government, because their futures, when they get done with government and politics, lies in the private sector that they would otherwise be watching over. And so there's all this compromise happens, and there doesn't seem to be any news media coverage of it today. And that's one of the problems. We don't have sunlight like we used to because the news media has changed so much. The news media used to be thriving. The newspapers would fund reporters so they could muckrake, so they could go and dig and find things. They could run stories that were contrary to the interest of the sources that were issuing press releases and the people they were talking to in politics. But what's happened now without that money to fund it is that news media has had to resort simply to the easy, low-hanging fruit. If you're a newspaper person, you've got sources, and your sources provide you with information off the record, and then they also provide you with news releases, and you don't want to damage those sources because you'll lose your easy content. Your ability to provide news is related to your relationship to those people, and you won't compromise them in the process. And almost all of the news media now has resorted simply to low-hanging fruit. And what's the low-hanging fruit? Well, we've got press releases from government. We've got sources in government who are willing to tell us things off the record. And then we have low-hanging fruit like Yay, who's, you know, simply gets attention if you write about them. And so that's what we're reading. We're reading stuff that is fed to the news media by sources and by other low-hanging fruit. And what we aren't getting from the news media anymore, other than from some vestiges of the past like Robert Woodward and others, is we're not getting the digging, the stuff that would uncover these problems or want to talk about them.
So do you attribute that, Sandy, to the big conglomerates that have sucked up all the local news and that controls many of the newspapers and others that used to be able to have more reporters, and now even as we watch the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel once again being shopped around in order to get rid of even more reporters.
I mean that's been another result of what is the real reason for this, which is the change in the way advertising occurs, and advertising has done so much more over social media than it is over paper media, that newspapers lost their revenue advantage, their revenue sources, and they were forced to try and figure out a way to run on leaner budgets, and it also caused them, as they foresaw lower revenue futures, to figure out ways to exit the industry, so that all the locally owned news media became nationally owned news media, and then those national ownership groups began to consolidate even more. So to the point now where there are very few national media giants that own almost all of local media, like here in Milwaukee. We've got Gannett owning our local media. They're a giant. And there's, their ability to pay attention to the local media, their ability or desire to spend lots of money on digging into the news in Milwaukee is far different than the days when we had the Milwaukee Journal and Sentinel under separate ownership. When you and I were small, when you had a paper route, the Journal and Sentinel were competing newspapers.
That's correct.
And they were competing for news, and they were digging for news, and they were shining a bright light on what was going on in both local settings and statewide settings. And all of that's gone.
And as we speak, Gannett is shopping around the remnants of the Journal now, because they say, well, hey, listen, you guys need to, those who've been around a while, you need to retire, because we can't continue at this pace. And I'm like, man, I really do. It is frustrating to me when I look at the Journal.
Well, the fact is that sometimes, more pretty frequently, there'll be a big story about Milwaukee that I read in the New York Times that isn't even in the Journal Sentinel.
Right. And so, but all of these different things, Sandy, are at the root of why the focus on the things that you and I talk about, which should be impacting, which are impacting the lives of all of us, aren't brought to the forefront. Unless you're listening to Sandy and Earl,
right?
You're not going to find out about a lot of these things, and it's why you're so important in the discussions that we have. Because I have these same questions. These questions that I bring up, I'm like, wow, I didn't know that. I really had no concept and no idea of that, but I do see the correlation between that and my life.
Well, the ability to explain why we have this darkness where there used to be brightness in terms of sunlight on public activity and the compromising of our government doesn't really give me a lot of hope as to how we're going to get away from it, because without sunlight, all this compromise and sort of quasi-corruption will continue to persist, and it has thrived. In the last 25 years, a lot of this compromise has expanded, and K Street has thrived, and I think it has come in parallel to this loss of revenue from media and the lack of capacity of media.
But Sandy, you and I is not going to change our lives, but it's those people who have uncertain futures in this country that this needs to be, you know, sanitized for, right?
Right.
Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. Hang on. We'll be right back on the other side.